listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
There, and welcome to today's version, today's episode, today's excitement for our LA Talk Radio show, Your Ultimate Life. Your Ultimate Life. This show is all about how to create that life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. How to do it, what to do, how to think, how to act, and how to change what's going on if it's not happy for you. Now, I was on LA Talk Radio a few years ago, and I came to really enjoy Sam and the people at the station and so forth. And I decided to come back this year for a couple of reasons. One, I love the video aspect of it. And I have a big mission and purpose and message. So I'm going to take this episode. Now, almost all of our episodes are going to have guests. And they're going to be exciting, powerful people. And the couple before this, you've seen some great folks. And the lineup for the next several weeks is going to blow your mind. But before I start in that, I thought, okay, I need to do an episode telling you, why am I doing this at all and what's the purpose of the show? So that's what we're doing today. This is just me today. Wow. Okay, the reason for the show is you. You are the reason. You are the focus. You are the person to be blessed, lifted, helped, loved, and encouraged. This show is about encouragement. It's about helping you, whether it's through my story, which I'll tell you a little of today, and the stories of those other folks that we bring on. And it isn't just to hear a great story, although that's fun. You hear a great story about people that do amazing and cool stuff, and you're like, wow, yes, that is a cool thing. But more important, today, I want you to listen for you. This is about you. So I'm going to use elements from my life because I know it best and to illustrate principles. But this is really for you. So all the way through, I want you to put yourself in here. Ask, how am I in that area, or how am I doing in that? Am I doing anything like that? Am I winning like that? Am I not happy with what's going on? About yourself. So this is what that is. Okay, my goal this year, my big hairy goal that I'm doing is I'm going to help 50 million people. Now, 50 million is a big number, or at least it is for me. Maybe for you it's a small number. I don't know. I don't know what your reach and work is. But for me, 50 million is a big number. And I chose that number because I felt impressed to. I had a inspiration, intuition, 50 million. Okay, 50 million people this year. Now, an interesting thing, my year doesn't start in January. My year starts in October, October 14th, as a matter of fact. And I'll tell you in a minute why that is. But it goes from October 14th, 2022 to October 14th, 2023. And in that space, I'm going to help 50 million people to do what? To discover your gifts, your natural gifts, if you don't already know what they are, and then to use them, to develop them and to use them to serve. Now, that's a broad statement. You may already know what your gifts are, and you may already be using them, or you may not have developed them very much. Most people that I talk to kind of know what they're good at. They kind of know where they excel. They are. It's a mixture of perhaps their innate gifts that they've developed, or skills and education, for example, that they might have developed on the way. But the important thing is when you're working with your gifts, you feel something. You feel something different than when you're just doing something you're good at. So I'll give you an example that happened for me this morning. I have a gift of music. Lyrics of love, melody of magic, harmony of hope. I have a gift there. And I know it because of the reactions I get from people and because of how I feel. When I'm in the music doing things, I play the piano and I have since I was very young. So I'm 67 now, so 60-something years. I started teaching when I was 17. But when I get in the music, I get lost. I am blessed with a connection to spirit, message, power, love, connection that I don't get any other way. So that's one of the ways I know this is a divine gift. Another way that I know that music is a divine gift for me is when I've used it, whether I'm directing a choir or an orchestra or writing music or singing or playing or composing songs, I feel something. And it does something for people many decades later. I had someone reach out to me just the other day and ask me for copies of music that I wrote for a choir that this individual was in. Years ago, decades ago, 20 plus years ago, he reached out to me. He was a teenager then. Now he's grown up. He's an attorney. He reached out and said, hey, I want some of that music. I want to use it in some musical stuff that I'm doing because it was so good and my experience with it was so good. And he said some nice things. So now I'm telling you that about me, but I want you to hear it about you. What are those things that you do that you feel connected to the divine? You feel inspired. You feel in flow. What are they? Now, if you know, are you using them fully? Are you developing them? Are you using to love and serve? Okay. And part of loving and serving is business and cash and prosperity and maybe online marketing and all of those things, but those are mechanics. The engine is your love. The engine is your divine gift. And so many of us get that backwards. There's so much hype about, you know, do what you love and the money will follow and learn to do internet marketing and this and that. And everything is focused on cash, 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 cash. You know what? During my journey that I'll share a little bit of with you in a minute, I had more money than I knew what to do with, and I was also miserable. I did dumb things. I, you know, had all kinds of problems, and I'm not afraid to share them. I wrote about them in a book called Tightrope of Depression. Tightrope of Depression, my journey from darkness, despair, and death to light, love, and life. Now, to give you a sense of why I'm here doing this at all, let me share with you my story. I was raised in a two-parent home. My parents got married very young, and in their mind, particularly my mom, her idea of discipline today, by today's standards, would be felony child abuse. We would have been removed. I would have been removed from the home, and I suspect brothers and sisters would have been also. I hold no anger, bitterness, or judgment toward her for that at all. I do not try to get sympathy or excuse from my past. It just was. And the learning that I got from that has been long and painful and difficult, both for me and for those that were part of my life during my times of being inflicted. So what happened was after I left home, and that abuse continued until I left home at 17, though I'd considered running away many times. I never went and got help, and I believed three things. One, that everything that ever went wrong was my fault. Two, that I was simply not good enough. And three, that there was no idea that I could get help because it was just wrong with me. I'm fundamentally flawed. So I lived my entire adult life from age 17 to 52. That's 35 years, if you want to do the math. I lived those 35 years struggling with this deep, deep depression and believing and furiously trying to prove to my mom, principally, that I was okay, that I would get the approved stamp on my forehead. What that meant was I got good jobs. I worked really hard. I made good money. But underneath, there was this feeling of self-sabotage and not good enough. And when I achieved success, I believed, well, I don't deserve this. Well, you know what that's like. And then you sabotage things. You create success, and either you stop right before the finish line or you wreck it afterwards. Well, I did that. And I didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't get help. Didn't go talk to someone because that was not okay in my mind. Obviously, it would have been okay, but depression was frowned upon. That was a long time ago. And even today, there's all kinds of, you know, stigma associated with those things. It's funny. I saw a television program last night. It was very funny, about an emotional support animal. And it was a youngster going to, I think, middle school with an emotional support animal. And he had a societal anxiety disorder, or I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. But it was basically fear of being around other people. And, you know, it showed in his mind things getting blown way out of proportion and sinking in the floor and some stuff that was funny in the dog. It's a series, and I saw a couple of episodes, but it was pretty funny. And, you know, the fact that we even make such a series now and show it, and you know, include and encourage people to love everybody around them just like they are, and that those kinds of things are real, not to be shoved off and ignored, which is where I live. Shoved off, ignored, stupid, wrong. And I'm sure you either know personally from your own deep and painful experience, or you know someone from their deep and painful experience. And you know where that goes, unrepaired, unhelped. It goes to suicide. It goes to believing that you're nobody and then ending your life. Or it goes to long, many years of just depression, doing nothing, addictions, trashed life, etc. Well, I had these two opposing things that kept doing the teeter-totter, kind of the seesaw back and forth. I had this incredible need to prove, because see, the basis for the discipline was religion. It was you need to behave a certain way, or you're not just bad, you're going to be destroyed, you're going to hell. So I believed, well, my mom must have had, obviously had God on her side, so she must be right. So I have to prove to her, proxy for God, I have to prove to her that I'm okay. Now, I realize at this moment saying this how not okay that is. I do now, but now I'm 67, and it's been 15 years since a divine intervention at age 52, which was 15 years ago. So in that 35 years between 17 and 52, I had wild successes. I had staggering failures. And I lived with those two things pulling at me. I'm not good enough. So whenever I create success, I don't deserve it and I need to wreck it with, oh, I have to prove that I'm good enough, otherwise I'm finished. And so those things as power in my motivation in life went back and forth and back and forth. What it manifested into physically or in the real world was I created good jobs and got married, had kids, and then I would wreck all of that. So I would wreck the job that I have, do something to get in trouble, get fired, or have to leave, and then also ruin the relationship. Now, that cycle of self-destructive behavior repeated several times. Sometimes it included addictions, terrible, sometimes terrifying addictions that made me, you know, a wreck, mostly drugs. And sometimes it didn't include it so much, drugs and alcohol. But I went up and down that roller coaster over and over again, creating big success to prove I was okay, believing that I didn't deserve it and trashing it. By the time I was 52, here's Kellen in August of 2007. I have been married and divorced three times. I am at the third or fourth time up and down the roller coaster, but I'm at the top now with career and money and everything. I have been in and out of rehab facilities a couple of times, and I'd attempted suicide just 2 weeks before this event that I'm going to tell you about that happened in August of 2007. At the same time, I had had 10, yes, 10 children. They were all mine. I loved them all dearly, but I wasn't much of an example or a dad. Sometimes I tried to be there really hard because I was trying to prove I was okay. And other times I was lost in my own depression and addictions. And then on top of that, there was the, you know, the wreck of the relationships that came in and out. So needless to say, behind me in my life was an enormous, sad, heartbreaking, painful battlefield. Three divorces, 10 children, rehab. And in August of 2007, when this event I'm going to tell you about started or happened, I was a cocaine addict and I was using about $3,000 a week was the habit. And that's a lot. And I was making enough money that that didn't matter. As I mentioned, I'd attempted suicide a couple weeks before. So on a Friday night in August of 2007, I came home from work. I was getting ready to go out to party for the weekend. Four of my 10 kids were teenagers and living with me. Three were grown up and married. And three were living with, well, it's embarrassing to say it, but one of my exes. You know, when I was growing up, I never in any universe imagined that I'd have to say those kinds of words. I assumed I was going to get married, be a great dad, and have a family, and I wasn't prepared and didn't have any idea how to do any of that. So, of course, it didn't happen. Anyway, that's the situation. I came home on a Friday night in August of 2007 and was getting ready to go out to party for the weekend, and I probably would have come back on, I don't know, Monday, maybe Tuesday. And for some reason, I felt the urge to turn on the television. Now, that doesn't sound like anything, except I picked up the remote and realized I had no idea how to turn on the TV. I didn't watch TV. And so I'd had the biggest stuff installed that you could buy at the time because, you know, that's what you do when you make a lot of money, you know, stupid things. And I wasn't even using it. So I looked at the remote. Ooh, I don't know how to do this. And I asked one of my kids and my 16-year-old daughter, she punched some buttons and threw the remote at me and left. It landed on a program that I don't know if is on anymore, but at the time, it was a reality TV show called Intervention. And in case you know, maybe you know, maybe you don't, Intervention is a program about families who stage professional interventions with counselors or priests or both and family members to help a busted loved one who's in the middle of some self-destructive behavior and they're trying to help them. So in this particular case, the protagonist was a high-ranking executive with a cocaine problem. Holy cow. So I watched myself on the show for about 10 minutes and got upset. So I'm not watching this crap. I turned it off and did a few other things and was getting ready to go back out. And I felt compelled, like unreasonably compelled, to turn on the TV. So I did. And this time I knew how. And that program started over. And no, I didn't have a DVR, a recording device. No, it wasn't on the schedule. And no, it can't do that. But it did. And it scared me, freaked me out. So I thought, I guess I'm supposed to watch this. So I did, and it didn't go well. The guy got mad and yelled at his family and stomped out and swore he didn't have a problem, and you know the drill. You probably know people like that. Maybe you've been someone like that. But anyway, but it freaked me out enough that I went to bed instead of going out to party. When I went to bed, I went to hell. Now, what I mean by that is I went somewhere. It felt out of body. I was in a large, dark room. It felt like a theater, and there was a stage, and I could hear voices and stuff. And what went on the stage was scenes from my life. And they were all focused on one thing, not just any scenes, but the scenes all focused on suffering. From the suffering that had been inflicted on me with brutal discipline all throughout my childhood, up through and including the suffering I had inflicted on everybody else. As a person struggling with untreated depression, a broken person who didn't know how to help and be supportive, a crappy dad, a crappy partner, and all the rest. So it included this whole range of suffering over that, you know, period of years up to when I was 52. And my experience at the time was so intense, I can't describe the suffering. It was just beyond my ability to describe. So anyway, after a long time, I heard a voice say, "It is enough." I wasn't angry or loud or anything. It just said, "It is enough." I woke up and was a bit disoriented because the sun was shining in my bedroom window and the windows faced west. I got up and realized it was 5 o'clock Saturday afternoon. So I'd been somewhere for nearly 18 hours. I didn't know what to do. I obviously was deeply, deeply struck by what had just happened. And I realized, okay, I've been invited to change. I have no idea where to go, who to talk to, how to start or anything else, because I'd never done anything for myself in that regard. But I knew I had to change. So I threw away what I had left, $1,000 worth of stuff, and I quit. Drugs, cold turkey, that day. $3,000 a week to zero. So it had that profound of an impact on me. But what it didn't do was change how I got there, which was isolation, depression, self-loathing, believing I wasn't good enough, etc. Those are the underlying beliefs. but it did get me sober. When I went back to work on Monday, I knew that I had to change my whole life, get a new career, get it, just start over. But I didn't know how to do that yet, so I went back to work. And because of the position I had, I used to get free stuff, free tickets and free expensive bottles of booze, like I needed that. But so I got those free things. And one of the things I got was a pair of tickets to see a Yo-Yo Ma concert. Now, I don't know if you know classical music, you know who that is. And if you don't, you don't. But in the classical world, that's like, fabulous person. And I thought, oh man, I'm loving this. I can't wait to go see this concert. But I was single again for the third time, and I didn't have anybody to go with me. And I wasn't trying to have someone go with me, but I didn't want to waste that other ticket. So I asked in the groups of people that I managed who likes classical music. And some lady in one of the groups said, well, I do. And I said, have I ever given you anything before? And she said, no. And I said, okay, fine. I see you there. So I gave her the ticket. We met at the venue. The concert was spectacular. And halfway through the concert, I got to know, this concert was 2 weeks after that other event. So I'm now 2 weeks stone cold sober. Stone cold sober. And halfway through the concert, this feeling, this voice came to me and said, you need to marry this woman. And I freaked out. I said, no, I've messed that up 3 times officially with some other terrifying messes in between. Not happening. So later that night, we were backstage because they weren't just good seats. They were backstage passes and the reception and all this other stuff. And the voice came back as we were backstage and said, yeah, and you need to tell her tonight. And I was beside myself. I had no idea what to do and was scared because, number one, I didn't know her very well. Number two, I didn't know if she had a relationship. And number three, she could obviously, have me arrested, call the cops or HR or something for harassment. And so I just argued, no, can't do this. But you don't win those arguments. You just don't. So later I did, and it went about like you would have expected. She thought I was crazy, out of my mind, but she didn't call any authorities and didn't have me arrested, which was good. And it turns out she wasn't in a relationship. As things go in these sorts of divine interventions, within 2 weeks, she had her own set of experiences. And 2 weeks after the concert, which was now about 4 weeks after the original event, I left all the contracts, walked away from millions of dollars of contracts. She quit and resigned her career. And about a month and a half ago, we celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary. Now, that is an incredible story in itself, but the thing that matters the most is that she was the angel, literally, that was sent to help me, the other half. I got sober, but there was nothing that helped me become a person. So she found me people to talk to. I say she was the angel that was sent to help me become a person, and she felt like it was her soul contract to do that, that she had agreed to do that thing. So anyway, I know the whole story is amazing, and if you want to read about it, it's in the book Tightrope of Depression, and you can just find that on Amazon or along with all my other books. I've written 18 now, but anyway, so, that happened. In the first several years, we had to get to know each other because we didn't, and it was not easy, and there was all kinds of work to do, because when those kinds of invitations happen, and this is why this is important, you have felt divine impressions. Maybe they weren't as loud as mine. Maybe I was so deaf I needed a couple of 2x4s. Maybe I needed to be bashed over the head. But I can tell you, it would have been just as easy when I woke up Saturday afternoon or came back in my body Saturday afternoon or whatever it was, and just as to go do something else. Would have been just as easy to just blow off those impressions, powerful as they were, to talk to this woman. And I could have done that and had many times, and maybe you have too. So the volume of the impression or intuition or voices or what we see, those are directly related, I think, to how thick our skulls are or how many times we've said no. But when they happen, whether they're dramatic, like mine were, or if they're subtle, like they are now, you have to say yes. You have to trust the unknown and move forward. I had still had no idea what to go do. So we walked away from careers and started life all over again with absolutely no idea what to do, because I knew it was right. And I've asked her many times, what on earth prompted you to walk away from your career and off into the sunset with a drug addict? I mean, everybody in the office knew. They didn't know, but they knew, right? And she said, I just knew to the core of my soul it was the right thing to do. So those kinds of things, small or large, happen. Those invitations, you feel them as intuitions. Some people call them nudges. Some people call them whisperings, ideas, intuition, inspiration, even revelation, where you feel like words come and ideas come fully formed. The key, if you want to live this ultimate life, is to say yes. Even if you have no idea where the path is, even if you only know the next step. So what I knew then was to get sober. What I knew then is to follow the promptings at the concert. What I knew then is when she had her own promptings, we walked away from the entire industry and started life over, figuring it out as we went because we knew that's what we needed to do. So I offer you that piece, and there's more to the story, but I offer you that piece, along with the fact that we had to spend the first 4 or 5 years just getting to know each other and getting organized. Because it's never too late for you right here, right now, to listen to your divine intuition. It's never too late for you to discover your gifts. It's never too late to strike out on an unknown path. And sometimes people say to me, well, I have all these obligations and I have this and that and the other. Okay, I don't doubt that a bit. Yes, of course you do. So maybe you don't jump off a cliff like I did. Maybe you build a ramp. I've helped so many of my clients build a change ramp, a ramp of transition. The building of a ramp of transition isn't hard. What's hard is the courage to walk it, the courage to declare, I'm doing a new thing because I said so, because I feel like this is what I need to do. That's what's hard. The process of building a new life is well known, well documented, and well understood. What has to happen is you have to make firm declaration, and then you build that life a little at a time. I found finally getting some counselors and shrinks and those kinds of things was essential for me. I also found that getting a coach that understood what was going on and was going to hold me accountable and help me be all that I could be, that was essential for me. So all of that was wrapped up in getting help, which I'd never done during those 35 years of terror, which had driven myself to the despair of, you know, the attempt on my own life. So getting help, being coachable, you know, just going to do the things that there are to do, that is the first set of steps. And if you get help, especially a good coach, now, a shrink can help you the way that shrinks do, but a coach can help you build a ramp, a good coach, to a new life. Vision the new life as it really will be. And then figure out the first steps, because nobody jumps from there to here. Like there, after that, those two events, I didn't have any idea what to do. And I was standing there staring in the sunset. Today, I've written 18 books. I have built a coaching practice with clients around the world. I've composed several albums. I was in a musical group that charted number one on Billboard, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those things have been created post this choice to say yes to the divine intervention and walk out into the unknown. So my 50 million, my road to 50 million is a process, is a declaration that I've said for this year, I'm going to help 50 million people discover their gifts and choose to serve with them. Now let's talk a little bit about what choosing to serve means. To love and serve is not some woo-woo complicated concept. Loving is simply choosing to help someone in their best interest. I define it a particular way. We all have resources. We have spiritual resources, we have physical resources, we have emotional resources, and we have mental resources. Those are arbitrary divisions, but I think of them that way. And the physical in my mind includes financial things. So if you choose to help someone with your spiritual, physical, emotional, mental resources, you're loving that person. And the more you choose to lift and bless them, the more you love them. So when I say to you, I love you, or to clients that I love them, it means I'm willing, absolutely willing and excited to use the resources that I have to bless them, lift them, encourage them, and help them on their way. So that's what loving and serving is. And what your gifts are, I don't know, but you can find them. Look to your own adversity, what things have taught you through the kind of pain that I just described. Those are places that you have developed, special power, special empathy, special capability. Maybe you've developed some skills that are really good. You can use those things to serve and bless others. Now, then we get to the purpose. That helps you find your purpose. Prosperity is both monetary, and it's also life, relationships, joy, prosperity of, you know, just being alive. Those kind of things, prosperity, and including money. So let's talk about money for a minute. It isn't difficult to create money. People imagine they have a story about money that it's hard to get, or they can't do it, or they don't deserve it, or they can't keep it, or that whatever, the stories about it. But the truth is, money is nothing but accumulated energy. If you build something, you could sell it. People used to grow crops and they sold them or they traded them. Money is nothing but accumulated energy. And so if you put your love and energy into something and you keep doing it, you can build something. Like I've built a coaching practice, like I've helped people write books, like I've helped people build their own businesses, online businesses and service businesses and product businesses. So it's never been easier in the history of my life, at least, to build a business, make a living, and to serve people. And the reason is simple. The internet and our ability to communicate and reach around the world has never been like it is. And so your customer base or the potential people you can serve is a zillion. And it used to be, you know, 50 or 100 or 1,000 in your neighborhood. Now it's infinity, relatively speaking, right? I don't know if aliens watch our broadcasts or not, but they probably don't have dollars or pounds or euros to pay. But anyway, your audience is infinite, your reach is infinite, and you have gifts and talents. The only question is, are you willing to walk the road to develop them? The way to build a business online, the way to reach people, maybe it's offline, online, the way to offer services, that's all well known. There's no mystery there. There's only the question, are you willing to walk the path? So let's move on with the story. After that happened and I started to create a new life, I first thought about writing. I hadn't been an author before, and I didn't really write stuff in my career as an executive, some technical papers and stuff, but I hadn't written a ton. And I didn't particularly like writing, and I didn't think of myself as an author. Then I decided, you know, expressing myself, I actually do that really well, and I am going to write. So I started writing. And then I started writing, and now I can't stop. I have 18 finished. I have a couple underway and 6 more in planning stages. It's going to be the next few years. That's publication for 2023, 4, 5, and maybe even 26. So the next 3 or 4 years, publication schedules are figured out. But I'm excited, and it's fun, and I love to do it. You know why? Because it's a way I offer help and service to you, to the 50 million people that I'm trying to help. You know what else I do? I do music. So for the Tightrope of Depression book, I wrote an album of music. And it's got 11 songs on it. And it's called Name of the Black. And if you go on Spotify or Amazon or any of those places, you'll find it. Name of the Black. It's got 11 songs. The next book I wrote after that was Down from the Gallows, which is a continuation. I actually hadn't intended to write any more about depression or my own journey until I got done with Tightrope. And I realized, wow, I'm just getting started. So I wrote an album of music called Down from the Gallows. And it's got 11 songs. The album's not. The book is Down from the Gallows. The album's called Promise and Power. And it's got 11 songs telling stories from then. You know what? There's going to be a third book in that trilogy, and it'll be out middle of this year, 2023, maybe fall. And guess what? I've got an album of 15 songs underway for that. And some of them are finished already, and I've been performing a couple of them, some of them online. So my point is, I went from not knowing how, not being able to do that, being broken and an addict and a suicide attempt survivor, to where I am today. So that is the ramp and the transition that I walked and that I want to help you walk. Now, the ramp after you started is certainly not without peril. So here's, as you know, we spent years getting to know each other, started building business, started writing, et cetera, et cetera. And in 2018, which is 11 years after the first intervention, Joy and I didn't tell you the most fun part. That woman, that angel, her name is Joy. I didn't tell you that. Her name is Joy. And if you go on my Facebook wall, you'll see some pictures of her. I commissioned an artist to do a couple of paintings, and they came the other day, and they're 16 by 20 museum grade stretched canvas, breathlessly beautiful. So anyway, that was her Christmas present. So anyway, after we, we're going along building this business and everything, 2018, which is now 4.5 years ago, in June, so 4.5 years ago, yeah, we went on a cruise, and we'd never been on a cruise before, and we just decided to go. So we did, went to the Baltic Sea and visited the ports there, including St. Petersburg, which, given the situation in Europe, may never happen again, all that sadness. But anyway, when I got home, on the last day, I got sick, and when I got home, I got really sick, and I was crashing badly, badly, badly. Got sick on a Monday, got home on Tuesday night. By Thursday night, it was terrifyingly bad, and I couldn't tell myself, okay, it'll be all right. On Friday, I went to the walk-in clinic. We live in Canada, and they have walk-ins, and we had gone to this neighborhood one all the time, and so the doctor there was our family doctor, and they wouldn't let me in. The nurse took one look at me and said, you can't come in here. There's nothing we can do for you. Go to ER right now. So that scared me. I went to ER. And long story short, by Friday night, which was the fifth day of this illness, they had not only admitted me to the hospital immediately as soon as I walked in there, they had put me in intensive care. They had put me in biological isolation, which is a double door room, and all the rest. And they had asked for permission to intubate and do anything they needed to do to preserve my life. That was terrifying. Friday night, my heart stopped and I died. That precipitated another experience which I never would have expected. I had a near-death experience. I had three conversations with God at the door between life and eternity. Of course, that spawned another book called Meeting God at the Door. After some, the most important conversation there was the first one. We met at this doorway, which was white on one side and gray on my side, and I'm standing at the door, leaning on the door jamb, and across the doorway was someone else. And that side was white, and my side was gray. It wasn't streaming through, but it was just white. And I looked at me, and he said, you want to come home? And I knew in a millionth of a second what the doorway was, who I was talking to, what the question meant, and everything else. So I was both scared, curious, all kinds of stuff. And so we talked for a while, and I finally said, I'm not done yet. And he said, okay. So I'm quite sure that that's when they were able to restart my heart. And notwithstanding my heart being restarted, over the next 2 days, we had two more conversations, and the contents of it are in the books. So I'm not going to detail them all right now. You can read them if you want. Books named Meeting God at the Door. And then there's a companion volume about something that happened in the second conversation, which was quite long, called The Book of Context. That's important because it has to do with the core issue for you achieving your ultimate life. After part of these tremendous visions, I spoke and I said, well, since all this is true, all this glory and power, and it was clear to me we all have gifts and we all have purpose and we were all lovingly created and all that stuff. And I said, well, since that's true, why do we settle for crumbs? Mostly. I mean, that's right. And I don't know if in the economy of heaven, brevity is a virtue, but he looked at me. The answer was four words. He looked at me and said, because you don't believe. So I asked, well, what can I do? about that? Oh, glad you asked. So what came then was a whole framework about working on beliefs. And that's written in a companion book called The Book of Context. Because context is that set of beliefs that you have right here, right now, that keep you from being all that you can be, doing what you can do, following the nudges, creating that life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Maybe you believe you can. Maybe you believe you don't deserve it. Maybe you believe it's too late. Maybe you believe you've tried and failed and therefore you can't. All that stuff is nonsense. Those are simply beliefs. They're not true. They're not written in the cosmos. They're written in your heart and your head. And the Book of Context is about how to change that. So I ended up being in a coma for 17 days after those visits. And eventually I was revived. I'd lost 35 pounds. I couldn't walk. What it turned out to be, and they didn't even know this till the end of day 8, which was the following Monday after I died on Friday night, was a necrotizing superbug, a necrotizing MRSA that was in both my lungs and the bloodstream. And the infectious disease specialist, who was the head of infectious disease at the University of Alberta, said he'd never seen a case of pneumonia that bad. And he told me, he said that in this time of COVID, we talk about a mortality rate of 2%, maybe 1.5%, 2%, some places 3%. He told me the 10-day kill rate, now this is in 2018, so it's pre-COVID, but it doesn't matter. He said the 10-day kill rate of what you had was 100%, period. So, of course, it killed me. And I am back here by choice. And I came back because I wasn't done. And the not done means I'm not done helping people realize who they are. Now, this is where this whole turns back to you. Because you're just as important as me. There's nothing important or special about me. You are a divine being. You have gifts, capabilities, and talents. You receive inspiration and nudges. You are worthy. You can make a big impact. And I don't care where you've been or what's happened before. I sometimes say, you know, if there was ever a candidate to be left at the bottom of the canyon, it was me, given my previous life, but not true. Not true. The invitation came. I still had to climb. I still had to heal. But the invitation came. This is an invitation for you. Hear it? Don't hear it. You are loved. You are needed. You are powerful. You are capable. That is a true statement. You can disagree. You can disbelieve. You can cite all the reasons it's too late and you can't. Or you can accept this invitation to create your ultimate life. Now, I have a podcast called Your Ultimate Life. I've got 750-something episodes. We're moving on toward 800. That I started at the beginning of the pandemic as a daily activity, announced twice a week. It's also called Your Ultimate Life, like this. I have a television show. I'm on a network called Traverse TV. Watch.traversetv.com. That's spelled T-R-A-V-E-R-S-E, watch.traversetv.com. Your Ultimate Life, of course. All of those things, television program, this show, and my podcast, and I have a daily video I put up called Road to 50 Million. All of those things are my effort to encourage you, to love you, to help you see who you really are. And to say yes to your invitations, because this is one of them, every single week when I broadcast this with guests. And I don't intend to do, like I said, this solo stuff much, maybe occasionally. But the point here in this show, and now in the podcast too, is I want to get as many guests on here as possible to help you feel loved, to help you see your own possibility, to help you say yes, to encourage you to get the help that is available. The tools are available. The people are available. And sometimes people say to me, well, Kellen, you act like, you know, it's just easy. Like you can just go do that, like suck it up and go do it. If you're hearing that, you're not hearing anything I'm saying. It doesn't matter where you are, What matters is you take a step forward. Now, if your growth trajectory is pretty slow because of what's going on in your life, okay. Like, I'm not saying anything. I'm not even saying you have to do this. This is an invitation to lean into your divinity at whatever speed you can. It's an invitation to get help. It's an invitation to reach out, regardless of the number of starts and stops, regardless of the number of things that feel like failure. One of the books that I have in that list that I talked to you about is a book called Failure, The Art and Science of Challenging Boundaries. And it's about redefining failure. Failure isn't anything. Failure is just not getting the outcome you intended. So if we're not failing, we're not trying, we're not doing things. Because often we're going to get an outcome we didn't intend. I do that all the time. If that made me quit, then I'd be done. You know, quitting's always available. We know where that goes, nowhere. If you need to rest, rest. But what I finally learned after 35 years of destruction and isolation and believing not good enough and self-sabotage and all the things I listed before, what I learned is that help is available. What I learned is there is a road forward. What I learned is you can do this, whatever the this is you define. Like, I'm not defining for you what you need to do. I wouldn't even dream of that. My goal to help 50 million is my goal, and I'm just using it as an illustration. Your goal should be whatever calls you from your heart. Your goal should be found by searching your own soul and deciding who you want to be. Not from society, certainly not from Facebook, social media, Instagram, TikTok, or Yo Mama production. Forget all that. You decide who you want to be, what you want to be, and then get the help to move there at whatever speed you can. And don't let anyone tell you you can't. It may be a different path. It may be a different speed. It may be any journey that you want. But this invitation is for you to take the reins, take the control of your life. For decades, I lived in the idea that because of what had happened to me, I couldn't do thus and such. And the list of things was really long. I believed in that. And as long as I kept believing in it, I couldn't. When I said, I'm going to throw that thought away, and instead I'm going to say this. I'm moving in this direction toward this goal, whatever it was, health, wealth, you know, whatever it is, relationships, doesn't matter. I don't know how I'm going to go. I don't know how fast I'm going to go. And I don't know where the path leads. And I don't know how many times I'm going to fall on my face. But I'm going to keep going, even if it's slow, even if it's funny, even if I have to rest. That decision, I'm going to move from where I am. I refuse to stay stuck. And I'm going to reach out, be vulnerable. For me, it was write books, talk to people, get counselors, get coaches. Your path is going to be whatever it is. But this is your invitation to create your ultimate life. And in order to do that, you need to define it. What is your ultimate life? I define mine as a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy that I create by serving with my divine gifts. And that's what I postulate is an ultimate life. But that differs for every person because our abilities, our past experience, and our divine gifts differ. What I know for sure is you can go there on whatever path is there. My goal with this program is to bring people who have examples, to bring ideas to help you make those choices, to help you decide, no matter what, I'm not staying stuck. If you don't feel stuck and you're already living that kind of life, I'd love to connect with you because I love to have more people in my circle that are doing that and put them on my other platform. So if you want to connect, please do. If you want help, please connect. But this whole program is an invitation for you to make a choice to take control of your life, whatever that looks like, however slow or circuitous the path is. Living in joy every day, I call it unconditional joy, is possible. It is there for you. You are not an exception. Your joy and your path are going to be uniquely yours. But I know you can have it, and all of the guests that I bring and all of the shows are designed to encourage you, to love you, to lift you, to help you, to see you, and to help you move forward, however slowly or however fast, on the road to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.